It's time for another episode of The Scoop. Get ready to talk Temple Athletics with John DiCarlo, Kyle Gauss, Matt Vender, and Dalton Balthaser.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Season 3, Episode 6 of The Scoop. I'm Dalton Balthaser, joined by my weekly Wednesday media greats, Matt Vender, Kyle Gauss, John DiCarlo. How's it going?
Oh, I'm great. Kyle's angry.
I'm not in a great mood.
Kyle started off in an angry frame of mind.
Not a great mood.
Why?
What's wrong? It's a long week. Got a lot of stuff.
Is that why you're taking it out on me with the peanuts?
No, the peanuts thing is legitimate. It's like the time when you just like unfoiled candy in front of the microphone for 5 minutes to start the scoop.
Like I said, it's authentic natural sound is what it is. It's protein.
You said that as if you had more coming. Like it's A, B, C, D, and you just stopped it.
Well, you look like you gave me this look like you were trying to cut me off.
No,
like,
I was waiting.
Like I'm staying up past my bedtime.
That's my face, sir. That was my default face. Anyway, let's keep going.
The Owls lose 20-13 last Saturday against Houston. They scored 13 unanswered points in the second half after really struggling to find their footing in the first half, especially in the run game, negative yards in the first half, but they were able to rush for over 150 yards in the second half once All-American Ed Oliver was out of the lineup due to injury. But I guess immediate takeaways from this game from Temple, they do show some offensive signs later on in the game, and they're 2-3 now.
Nick Chargo with a cheap shot to take out Ed Oliver, but it is what it is.
Since we're talking about Ed Oliver, I mean, for the most part, they kept him in check. He had one tackle, although, in going back and looking at this, there were two things that went wrong on the play where Logan took a 24-yard sack. The first thing is they single-blocked Ed Oliver on that play, and after it seemed like they were double-teaming him a fair amount of time, like they were giving Matt Hennessy help. He really wasn't much of a game wrecker. But yeah, I don't think he wasn't the reason why Houston won. So that was going to be like a big storyline, but they held him in check for the most part, except he did affect that play. Now obviously Logan's not gonna take should not have taken a 24-yard sack. I don't know that I would have brought him out after that, because it was such an egregious error that made a huge difference in the game. But one of my takeaways is, and people probably don't want to hear this, is like Kyle said this when we were talking last night, they are getting better. I think the second half should provide you with some encouragement. One of my other takeaways is that the expectations for the program, just I'm basing this anecdotally on like Twitter mentions and stuff on the message boards. I mean, you would think that people thought they were going to go 12-0, and that's great. People should have high expectations. But I do think they are starting to show signs of progress. I think you should be encouraged by what you saw in the second half. But it would have been great if they could have finished off the game. Quarterback play has got to be better. Running game got going. But as much as I hate saying this, and I hate when people ask this question, but I do think they have some stuff to build on from the second half.
Yeah, I look at the whole team and I just think they have actually improved. They've gotten better, especially the defensive side of the ball. I think they've improved every game. Mm-hmm. I think you could argue that. I think they've continued to get better. I mean, that defense played really well, especially in the second half against Houston. Their running game finally got going. In the second half, they ran for 150 yards. Doesn't wipe away the fact that they ran for -4 yards in the first half, which mm-hmm. is an issue that, you know, continued going back to really the opener at Notre Dame. They ran the ball well in the first half in the opener at Notre Dame, hadn't really had much success since that. The only thing that I haven't seen get better, I've seen the quarterback play almost get worse. I mean, the last two games, it's been really, really bad. That 24-yard loss that Marchie took is just unacceptable. I mean, he has to get rid of that ball. You can't take a 24-yard loss on third and goal. You need to get points there, whether it's a field goal or a touchdown. You need to get some points there, and that really cost them. You know, I think that was just one of the worst plays I think Marchie's made all year. I think the quarterback play has to get better. I was a little bit surprised that they didn't maybe let Neutile get some work. I know Dave Patnood said that they wanted it to be Marchie's show this week. They gave him the chance for it to be his show. He didn't show much. I think it would only be fair to maybe give another guy a little bit of a shot, whether it's Neutile, whether it's Senteo, whether it's your scout team quarterback, Anthony Russo. I don't know, but the quarterback play needs to get better.
Yeah, and Jeff Collins did come out and say this week, he's like, well, I mean, I know in the numbers like and watching the game, it looks like he played poorly, but there's still things, situations where, you know, it's a run-pass option, he chooses the right play, or he slides the protection the correct way, and that's what leads to the successful runs. I get that, but there's no way you can tell me that there's not somebody else in that room right now that knows to throw the ball away instead of taking a 26-year-old sack. That physically, Logan Marchie might be the best quarterback that we've seen so far. He throws the best ball. He has a stronger arm than we all thought. He has the most mobility ever than maybe Ty Senteo. But I just don't, for lack of a better phrase, or for a, to use a cliche, I just don't see that effect with him.
Yeah, I would have sat him the rest of the game, and then if you put Frank out there and he stinks it up in the second half, then you bring Logan back and allow him to recompete for the job. I think they're in a really tough spot with the quarterbacks because I think, again, they haven't said this, and they'll say with Senteo it's a week-by-week thing, game-by-game thing, which is fair because they can't see the future. They may have to play him. If I'm them, my two-cent take, very easy for me to say this, I give this thing like another week because the next 3 weeks, I'm sure a lot of other people could say this too, the next 3 weeks are going to tell you a lot. These are three very winnable games. We were talking about this before we started recording. It's ECU is not good. UConn, not good. On the road against Army, it's always a little challenging to play there. But they have three winnable games. If they win these next three games and then they're sitting at five and three, then you're like, okay, they're about where they thought they would be. Maybe you win six or seven games, you sneak into a bowl game. That's a good transitional year. If they can't right the ship during this stretch here, I don't know, man. Like, I just think they are – I think they have to be close to thinking, if you're going to keep learning and developing, why not do it with the kid who may be your future? I feel like they might be like a week or two away from making a firm decision on Toddy where they say, okay, let's give him a shot. You know, we know what we have in Logan. And for all we know, they may like Senteo. They may like Trad Betty a little bit more. If I'm them, I'd want to know by the end of the year. If you really, really are high on Trad Betty, then – you want to know, you want to have like a decent resume on Todd Senteo. Not to say that Todd should just be based on, you know, the last five or six games of the season, but I would not have, after that play, I would have sat Logan the rest of the game. I don't care how many starts you've had. I mean, that was just a really bad play. He's not really, if he's mobile, he hasn't really shown it other than on a couple of runs. So I think they're in a tough spot. I think they're going to have to decide sooner rather than later. It's always easier if the player makes a decision for him. If Logan goes out and plays a good game down at ECU, then he makes a decision for him. Then you keep putting him out there, and the bonus is you get to redshirt Senteo. But yeah, that was an awful decision. That was a mental midget moment right there for him.
And I think with Marchie too, there were a couple scenarios: third and two, third and one, where they ran the option, or he had the chance to get the first down, and he slid before the first down.
Those were rookie
mistakes as well. But I think a couple other key plays stand out. Obviously, the Keith Kirkwood 30-yard catch, that was a catch, not a catch, etc. The Mike Jones, Kyle and I were talking about this, the pass interference holding call there in the first half, and then Isaiah Wright at the end trying to scram out of bounds when he had the first down and trying to stop the clock there. I guess, what are your impressions of those type of situations on a team where, you know, Mike Jones is an experienced guy, and those kind of penalties that the AAC said were not good on
that's,
the
house. So it's interesting that they're floating that out there a little bit more. Like, that's just for context, that's not necessarily a new thing. Like, programs will send calls to the league virtually every week. And yeah, the league will sometimes say, yeah, we messed up on this one. I think this is a poor form on the Americans' part. So when we're covering games, there's a pool reporter. And Mark Narducci from the Philadelphia Inquirer is the pool reporter. And what that means for anyone who's listening is that one reporter represents the whole group. And if there's a call in the game, they go down, they talk to someone on the officiating crew, and they bring back the quotes for us. Mark asked to speak to the American about these calls, and they just said no. That's what Mark told me. That's poor form. I mean, come on. It's not a, you know, you owe us the opportunity to find out what happened. And apparently, you know, the Americans say, yeah, we messed up on the call. Didn't they say they messed up on the Mike Jones call? Or
They did not. I don't, not they did not one? Admit to messing up on that PI call in the end zone.
They said Kirkwood's was
they,
a catch?
The Kirkwood catch, that was a catch, the 30-yard reception that was overturned. Yeah, they said that was a catch, and the Sean Bradley
Sean
targeting.
Sean Bradley was not targeting.
That should not have been targeting. They said it shouldn't have even been a flag.
Yeah, and so that's fans may not like to hear this, but that's not uncommon. Probably happens with most teams and most conferences every week. They'll send tape up to the league. So it's unfortunate. It's definitely unfortunate. If you're asking about the Isaiah Wright play at the end of the game, yeah, I mean, just an absolute brain cramp on his part. You would have to assume that any program in America does two-minute stuff, and he is coached to you get the catch, you move forward, get down, flip the ball to the ref, you have the first down, you know that you have it, the clock stops. I mean, to his credit, he was like, yeah, I messed up. I didn't realize I had the first down, but you got to be aware. Anybody who's still arguing that he doesn't get enough touches needs to shut up. They get him the ball all the time now. I mean, they're constantly looking this direction, so he definitely is getting the ball a lot, and I think he's a very good playmaker. But would they have won the game? if he did what he was supposed to do there, no, probably not. But that was, even in that moment, you're like, oof, that was bad. It just looks like it's either poorly executed, poorly coached, or both. So.
And Mike Jones does get the number one jersey this week, taking that spot from Chappelle Russell
last
week.
He had a monster game, I think. Even with that pass interference, I think he finally showed what you expected with him coming in.
Yeah.
Like, he just looked like a strong, physical cornerback that could actually play man coverage.
Yeah, and covering a guy that was giving up a few inches to, right?
Also, Linwood Crump played a lot of ball in that.
They started three corners and only two linebackers, and he played a lot.
Going into the rest of the year with against ECU, yes, maybe not so much against UConn. Going up against some of these AFC teams, you're going to be starting three corners a lot, and Linwood Crump looks like he's positioned himself to be a multi-year starter going forward.
Yeah, the corners as a whole have looked good. I think Derek Thomas has given them some good ball. I mean, the defensive backs, cornerbacks especially, I think that play has been fine. I mean, the defense as a whole is just continues to get better. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think you have to feel pretty good about where the defense stands right now, five games into the season.
No, they're going to get a test coming up, so we'll find out.
Yeah, mm-hmm. that's a good passing game that East Carolina has.
So Matt had a chance to talk with Mike Jones on Tuesday about getting the number one jersey, and Mike also talked about that pass interference call. So here's that clip with Matt from practice on Tuesday talking to Mike Jones.
This week you got the single-digit number one. What does it mean to you to get that number?
Man, it's an honor. I think I've been putting in work since the spring, and I've seen a tremendous improvement in myself. So making plays come Saturday, that's my main goal. So, I mean, it was just an honor to get the number.
Did you see it coming this week, or was it a little bit of a surprise?
Honestly, I thought it would come earlier, but, I mean, I'm blessed to get the number, and I'm happy.
When you look back, obviously, at that PI call on you in the end zone, when you look back at that, I'm sure you look back at it with the coaches, what's the determination on that? Did you think it was PI?
Not really. We both fought for the ball, and I came up with it at the end. But, I mean, I'm passing. I'm ready for ECU this week.
And when you look at ECU on film, what have you kind of seen out of them so far?
They have a tremendous receiving core. I know some of the receivers. I played against the quarterback when he was at Duke. I played against the receiver number 85. Also, when I was a sophomore, so I know a couple of them. It won't be, you know, too much of a strain on me, but they're a tremendous group.
And I know they have a little bit. They have a pretty good atmosphere down there. They usually get a pretty good crowd. Mm-hmm. Have you guys been doing anything to prepare for the noise?
I mean, we've been playing against the noise all season. Notre Dame, but USF had a little bit of crowd, but they do come with a lot of people. But that shouldn't be a factor. It shouldn't be something that scares.
And you're five games into your Temple career now. How would you kind of describe or evaluate the way you played so far, five games in?
I would say relentless. I just have something to play for, so my mind is mainly set on that, and I'm just ready to keep going, just keep on flowing and try to make plays.
When you say something to play for, does that mean the NFL's on your mind?
Not even that. Just family, a child, just like that.
All right, so there's Matt talking with Mike Jones about the pass interference call that went against him and then also receiving the number one jersey. And now we'll transition over to East Carolina, 1-4 on the season, 1-1 in the American. Their scoring difference is the worst in the conference. They give up 50 points per game. They gave up 61, I believe, to USF last weekend. They put up 31. Initial observations of an ECU team that's one of the worst in the conference, and what the Owls need to do to get a win on the road here?
Just be physical against the receivers, and like we were saying earlier, I think it's a good sign that Mike Jones is playing well. He's giving you what you would have hoped for, and that he's, you know, he's being physical. He's I thought he played that one pass where he got flagged for PI. I thought he played it very well. It's good that Linwood Crump's getting in. Derek Thomas is playing a lot. Still, every once in a while, we'll kind of get beat and we'll luck out where a ball's overthrown, but it looks like they have a few guys they can roll in. I mean, Delvon Randall's having a hell of a year. I really think he's playing probably as well as any safety in the conference. I mean, he's playing the ball well. He's hitting. I mean, even beyond like the big suplex hit he had. I mean, he's just having a very, very good season and is very, very dialed in. So I would feel pretty good about their pass defense now with ECU going like 4 and 5 wide. Again, okay, you're going to have, you've got Jones, you've got Crump, you've got Derek Thomas, you've got Earl Foster. So, I mean, they have to stay healthy there, but I feel pretty good about their pass defense. It'll be interesting to see how much pressure they bring. If they can force them into some bad decisions. But you know, they're doing most of what they do through the air. So if I'm Temple, you have to feel pretty good about this game.
Yeah, other than Thomas Sirk, the quarterback transfer from Duke for East Carolina, They rushed 18 times for 21 yards last week. They are just going to bomb it out. These Temple cornerbacks have thankfully shown some steady improvement, a really good game last week. Mm-hmm. They're going to need it outside of that. I mean, Sirk can spin the ball a little bit. Temple was a little bit interested in him once he decided to transfer from Duke. Along with somebody they might see the week after in David Pendel if he gets his job back. So, yeah, I think this is – East Carolina is always going to put up points, but they're averaging 50 points a game against them in the game. They've averaged 40 points given up over their last, 14 games. This is a bad defensive team that misses what was their old coach's name? He's now at
Ruffin McNeil.
Yeah, McNeil. I miss Ruffin McNeil exclusively for teleconferences.
Well, and Mike said he knows the quarterback too. Mike Jones has a little bit of familiarity with him. He told you in that interview too.
Yeah, he said he played when he was at North Carolina Central. He played him, I think, his sophomore year against Duke. But North Carolina, I'm sorry, East Carolina might be the biggest drop that we've seen from a program that with Ruffin McNeil that was nationally ranked, and Temple they came in here and Temple beat them, but and they're ranked number 25 in the country. That was only three, four years ago.
2013, they went 10-3, and that's when they were.
And he got.
But they were ranked 18th in 2014.
And did he get let go? Was he their coach? So the year that they needed to, 2 years ago, before they played Notre Dame, when they had needed to go down there and beat them, and they finished them off in the fourth quarter, Ruffin was already gone that year, right? Did they get rid of him that
season?
No, Ruffin was there
after that year, and they said it's because they saw all the young coaches in the rest of the league, and they didn't understand why they had this old stuck in the mud.
Yeah, so that's really worked
that
out.
That just happened to make your team nationally relevant.
Yeah.
So then, and then they thought that Lincoln Riley would come back to be their coach, but then someone right after that was Lincoln Riley is incredibly loyal to Ruffin McNeil. He would never go back to East Carolina after what GS did to him. Yeah. And now Lincoln Riley is the head coach of Oklahoma.
Yep.
Yeah, it's been a pretty big disaster for them over the last two, three years.
Yeah, things worked out for everybody but East.
But, yeah, I mean, I look at this game, I don't look at it as, a game that Temple's probably going to win easily. I think ECU can air it out, and I think Temple's DBs are good. I think they'll be able to hold up against them for the most part. But East Carolina, I know they give up 50 points a game, but you got to keep in mind of who they've played. I mean, they played USF, they played Virginia Tech, they played West Virginia, they played two nationally ranked teams on the road. So, they're
do you use that same logic for why Temple's offense is awful? They played two nationally ranked teams on the road. At a certain point, you got to perform against the people you're playing against.
Right. But at the same time, to expect them to go in and beat West Virginia or beat Virginia Tech, I wouldn't expect that. They did get totally blown out over there.
They
but
gave up
I don't
38
think that,
points to
got
UConn.
Got ourselves a good old-fashioned debate going on.
They gave up 38 points to UConn. And UConn's offense looks awful. And
trash is your favorite word.
Trash, because they're a trash program.
They miss Bob Diak.
Lafayette put up 35 against Villanova, and Temple put up, 16 against Villanova?
Yeah.
So, we'll see. I don't know how much confidence I have that Temple's going to be able to let up the scoreboard, but...
ECU got blown out by 20 points at home against JMU.
Mm-hmm.
They're really bad, yeah, I know, but... I think I wouldn't take it as lightly as some people are taking this one.
Oh, no, I'm not taking this lightly. I think we're going to get to predictions. I think this is the type of game that even when Temple was good, it's like when they would go down and play bad SMU teams, they would still give up 40 points to SMU teams. They would just put up 60 to win because it just becomes one of those games and it kind of spirals out of control. You got to hope that this game doesn't become like that because I'm not sure if this Temple offense could put up 60 points.
And plus, they actually draw decently at home.
Look
at USF.
Students aren't there this week.
What's that?
Students aren't there. It's ECU fall break.
It's good knowledge by you. Yeah.
That'll help.
Not research.
Somebody was stalking ECU academic calendar. His name's Kyle.
Ladies.
Yeah, but when they went down there on that Thursday night before the Notre Dame game, that looked like an atmosphere that was a tough place to play.
Yeah, I was convinced they were going to lose that game just because it would have been such a letdown going into the next week.
Yeah.
Notre Dame.
Oh, yeah. I definitely thought I thought they were going to lose that game, no doubt.
Do you guys think... I know we'll get into predictions in a second, but do you think if Temple wins 6 games this year, they get into a bowl, or do you think it's like a couple of years ago where they won 6 games and they didn't?
Oh, I think they get in.
A couple of years ago, the conference was still really figuring out its bowl tie-ins. They had sold one of the bowl tie-ins coming into the year, the Bahama Bowl that year. It was supposed to be an American Athletic Conference, got sold to the Sun Belt or Conference USA, whatever. This year, there's just so many bowl tie-ins. If they get six games, they'll
make UConn it. A couple years ago even got into the St. Petersburg Bowl, I think. So, and they won six games that year. So, you know, I think there's the AAC has enough bowl games that, and the situation is good enough. If, with the conference now, I think they'll be able to get in.
Yeah, and if Mike Oresko somehow messes that up and does not get a six-win team in his league from Philadelphia in that media market into a bowl game, he's going to hear about it. From not just people at Temple, but just from people within the league saying, like, hey, like, you gotta do better than that. So, yeah, if they win six games, they're in.
Prediction time. What do you guys think? Because we all pick. What did you guys pick last
John
week?
Picked
I picked
Houston
I pick, with that?
John picked Temple.
I picked Temple to win last
week.
John so messed up. You just want to get that out there right away.
Well, he asked, who did you pick?
I refuse to give my pick. That's why.
Kyle's still in a bad mood.
I'm okay. I'm all right.
Who do you guys think wins?
I think Temple wins this game. I think they're going to give up some points, though. Not necessarily the defense is going to play poorly. I think it just might end up being one of those games. I mean, Davon Grayson is going to have – he's the new Zay Jones. He's going to have a lot of yards. Though Temple always kind of shut down Zay Jones a little bit. It was always like when they had like those marquee wide receivers, but like, oh, Zay Jones had three catches or whatever.
I think he was 7 for 66 last year or something.
Yeah,
like
which
that.
Is completely yeah, manageable like, for a second round.
Yeah,
NFL
well, the last 2 years they did have two NFL cornerbacks, so that helped.
Do they have now? They probably have one.
Yeah. I mean, Colin said yesterday he thinks.
I think Mike Jones.
Mike Jones. Colin said yesterday he thinks he thought Mike Jones could have been a mid round draft pick if he left.
What's
North
his definition of mid round? Like third to sixth? Sure. He could have been a sixth round pick.
How about Nate Harrison's safety the other night?
Yeah.
Well, good.
I haven't seen him really do anything in coverage, but they're using him a lot off like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think Grayson puts up numbers. I think Cirk puts up numbers. But I think Temple goes back to pounding the rock. I think they rush for a lot in this game. ECU's giving up 300 rushing yards a game. They're averaging.
Which is just awful.
Opponents are averaging 6 yards a carry against them. ECU doesn't run it all itself. I'm thinking Temple has 200 plus rushing yards and wins this game 38-21.
I'm thinking Temple wins this one. Similar neighborhood. I'll go 31. So I do think Temple does score the most points they've scored all year against this pretty awful ECU defense. I think if ECU makes it close, I'll say 31-28. Temple.
I'm going 34-31 Temple.
Great explanation. We all kind of gave info on why we were thinking in. You just
I think, I don't know, this offense just hasn't done enough for me to predict them in the 30s. I'll say 21-20 Temple. I don't think they score.
21-20.
Yeah.
Battle.
I don't know. I just don't see them winning a 35-30.
If they don't put up 28 points, at least 28 points this game, I think the Dave Patton criticism is 100% justified at that point. Maybe... Mm-hmm. Maybe it was just a bad hire because this is a terrible defense.
Well, yeah, they should just be able to run the ball. I don't think Logan's play. Logan might throw two interceptions, throw for 150 yards, and I still think they could put up 30 plus points because they should be able to run the ball.
Everybody
so
in this room's covered high school football at some point, right?
Yeah.
Right. In high school football, it becomes blatantly obvious at some points when teams you're just like the plays are never obvious. I've sat in a press box with the offensive coordinator of a team, like a Bach playing somebody, and they would literally just go run left, run right, and that's all it would. Just bam, bam, and they put up 45 points. This might end up being one of those games. It's a terrible rush defense. Just give the ball to Rockwell Arms.
Kyle Gauss evoking public league football.
Bach's now a white girl bar.
It is. 9th and Mifflin.
Yes.
The old rooftop.
But it used to be a very good football program.
We haven't touched on it yet, but the offensive line play looked a lot better against Houston, especially in the second half, too. I mean, we touched on the run game, but that
Pecosi
the offensive line.
Yeah,
they had a three-man rotation at left guard.
Jalen, right? Jalen Robinson, Pecosi. Still don't know what the hell was going on with Fair, right?
He might play this week. Is that what Colin said? He's trying to get back.
Yeah, he's trying to get back.
For somebody that doesn't talk about injuries, he's starting to talk a little bit about injuries.
Yeah, he's starting to talk about injuries unprompted.
We're starting
too.
To I hear things.
We're cracking them down.
Yeah. We haven't mentioned. You have Dave Patton, who actually now is he called the game from up in the press box. And had a chance to talk to a couple of people about this week, and what they think it signifies is that, you know, spread coaches like to be on the sideline. They like to be talking to the quarterback. They like to be in control of the substitutions and stuff. And I would think that Jeff is probably like, enough. We got to go back to running the ball. I got to win some games here. This is not like we win two games and everybody's cool with that. Like, we got to win 6 or 7 games, keep the momentum going here. That's an acceptable transition year. So Dave was up in the box. I think he was asked, like, did you get sent up there because of any theatrics with, you know, people like to make a big deal of the fact that he looked like he was swearing at Logan, he was getting into it Ventel.
He's a TV star.
Yeah, you know, and I think, like, typically, you know, from what I've been told, like coaches that are doing more pro set stuff, they like being up in the box, and it's not so much about being down there with like quick read substitutions and stuff like that. So that might signify that the offense is moving in the right direction. Maybe you can be a spread team next year if you feel like you have more of your personnel in place, if you feel like you're more comfortable with things. But I think that might have been a directive more so like, get up into the box, let's make sure we're doing what we do well, get the ball. Like, I don't know that I've ever advocated for a fullback to touch the ball like that much, but I think maybe Sharger should be getting a couple more times than just on like a short yardage situation. He can actually run the ball decently. And I think if people actually have to pay attention to him a little bit, any sort of physicality that you can exert on teams, like they weren't really, other than the first half of the Notre Dame game, they from the second half of the Notre Dame game up until the second half of last week, they were just an awful team in terms of being physical at the line of scrimmage. I mean, constantly getting pushed around. And the second half, I think, was a return to that. So Dave says he's going to be up in the press box the rest of the year. I think that means, I think, they could be a little bit more of a return to, you know, more of a power eye team. That's not to say that you probably won't see some spread concepts, but that could be a sign, a good sign of things to come.
Is it November of 2013? Because this is the exact same stuff that went through like Matt Rhule's first year.
Yeah.
They tried to spread it out. Eventually they realized.
Well, they did. And Matt did this a couple of times with Marcus Satterfield. They took him out in the 2-win season. They eventually put him up in the box. And then that 6-win season, they did the same thing. So this is not all that uncommon. So again, it might be progress moving in the right direction.
It seems to me, though, that the personnel may not match. Like, Raquel Armstead is in the spread, running out of the shotgun.
No, they shouldn't. They shouldn't be a spread team right now. I mean, again, anybody's capable of like spreading it out and saying, okay, in this play or this series, we're going to do this. But I think Logan's been better when like they're running tempo. But like they should be. Yeah, I don't. I think their thing has been like, okay, now we're going to run them. Now we are going to run. We're not going to run out of shotgun. But I don't think you just pick up that rhythm in like one play or something like that. So
yeah, it's something they got to stick to. Running power helps quarterback, because they'll just run a little play action off that, you know, give them the opportunity to get some confidence.
Yeah, and you saw, like, they were able to call on fourth and goal, and the fourth and goal, they're able to do that little flip from Marchie to Hood. If they weren't running the ball effectively, that you probably can't go to that play, because the defense probably isn't gonna fall for it.
It's just like another team that happens to call the link their home. It's crazy. You get some success going and just build upon it.
Let's take our next caller.
I listened to Sports Talk Radio for the first time in like a month on the way here, and I was like, oh, why am I doing this myself?
You listen to me when I'm on?
No.
At least you're honest. So smart. 10 o'clock on a Friday night when I'm on the phone.
I don't know what I was doing, but I wasn't listening to you.
Oh, well.
Sometimes I'll listen to it the next day when you if you tweet out the link.
I stop whatever I'm doing and just turn on 975.
I put my flashers on.
There we go. That's some support.
Go
right
around,
there.
Me.
Support. Go
around. It's time for our sometimes serious and sometimes silly mailbag. We appreciate the questions on the message boards and on Twitter. First question comes from Tannhauser. The question, the tomato cans were there again versus Houston. What is that?
I'm told it's to remind some players and coaches of a story they were told by a guest speaker. That's all I got.
Tomato cans.
Kyle is unimpressed.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Maybe it's a legendary story.
Let's keep you humble.
Must be a very good story. Tomato can. Maybe the Godfather's involved.
I thought it was for hydration or something like that. Isn't it true that if you drink like tomato juice or something,
pickle juice?
That's what Andy Reid made them do against Dallas in like 2000.
Who was the trainer? Who was it that did it? Wait, come on. He might be with them in Kansas City on his staff now. The pickle juice game was legendary. Come on. Rick Burkholder. Burkholder, right?
You're right.
But yeah, I don't think tomato stuff is acidic. I don't know. Who knows? Must have been a hell of a guest speaker. Maybe it was Brian Dawkins. Maybe it was, I don't know. But that's what I was told.
Next question comes from FreeMZY on the message board.
FreeMZ. Brian Freeman. Dynamic Temple football fan.
Is redshirt freshman offensive lineman Darian Bryant of Chestnut Hill Academy eventually going to be in the mix, or is he destined for the bench for 4 years like Aaron Ruff and James McHale? He's a really big kid, and he graduated high school in December of his senior year, so we know he's a smart kid. Chestnut Hill's shady side is an inter-AC school, so he's bright.
James McHale almost won a starting tackle job coming into this year, so I'm not sure if I'd write off James McHale just yet. No, he's a redshirt freshman. I'm sorry. It's just eventually, it's just too early. Darian Bryant came in a semester early. Yeah, he was a smart kid, came in December of his senior year. You're replacing basically three starters next year on the offensive line. There's going to be a lot of opportunity. Don't think that opportunity is going to involve Aaron Ruff.
From what I can tell, I don't think he's on the Aaron Ruff track. I mean, Aaron Ruff, just, I'd say, he's a four-star recruit who just, you can't play. There were a couple times this summer where I saw Bryant working out on the side, like going through like these stretching drills, going through stuff, like kind of like when Ventel Bryant first came in. Ventel Bryant was a beanpole, still a beanpole, but they were having him push plates and stuff. I saw a couple of situations like that with Darian. I don't think he's ready. Does that mean he's always going to be in a perpetual state of not being ready? No, but as Kyle said, he's a redshirt freshman. Now, kid like Pacozzi is progressing ahead of him. Doesn't mean the freshman can't play, but I think, again, I mean, Jeff says it all the time. This is a developmental program. He's a developmental kid. I don't know what his ceiling is. I wouldn't quit on him, but no, I don't think he's. I don't think you're going to see much of him being in the mix this season. I think obviously this coming spring will be an important spring for him because they need depth. They really need to build out depth after this season.
When Darian was being recruited, I think, you know, that what I was warned is I think they liked his potential for sure, and they liked his big size. They needed big offensive linemen, and it, obviously he's a big, big guy, but. I was warned that he's a project. I mean, he came in probably when, I don't know, I think they list him maybe around the neighborhood of like 320 pounds.
But he was heavier than that, right?
He was much heavier than that. I remember Matt Rhule said on signing day, that's nowhere near accurate. I think he was probably about 350 when he came in.
Somebody asked him about last year, and Rhule said, what, did he tell you that was his weight?
Like, yeah, it's shaming him a little bit.
Yeah, I don't know who weighs the guys to put the weights down on the official roster, but somebody's lying there. So he's a project when he came in. It says 6'5", 325 actually right here.
So
I'd say he's probably, I don't know what he's at right now, but when he came in, he was probably in the neighborhood of 350. So they needed to get his weight down. They knew coming in he was going to be a project. So I think next year the hope is that he'd be in a position to fight for playing time.
Offensive line is one of those positions that there's a lot of different ways to skin a cat on this. Like Matt Hennessy, okay, might be a 4-year starter. Adrian Sullivan barely played until he became a full-time starter as a junior. Leon Johnson was a sporadic starter until he was a full-time starter as a junior. Brian Carter was a defensive tackle. Like, there's a lot of different ways for this to happen. Just because he hasn't seen the field yet as a redshirt freshman, I wouldn't write him off yet. He's a likable guy. I mean, he turned down Pitt towards the end. He talked about honoring his commitment because he made a verbal commitment. As a man, you have to honor your commitments. He was a 3-star guy. He's a likable guy. I wouldn't give up on him just yet.
Next question comes from Fred A. on the message board. Since Nick Sharga is not being utilized much in the new offensive scheme, what are the chances
offensive.
We see him
is
on
Is that
D?
Supposed to be a joke? Offensive scheme?
I believe.
Sorry.
I think you have a better chance of getting Margot Robbie. I think he had that Spurs linebacker. There's no need to put him in at linebacker right now. Linebacker's playing well.
Second Margot Robbie reference on the scoop, right?
I think we had an entire segment on her.
But it was like it was one of Pat Eakin's questions, right?
Mac and cheese, right?
Mac and cheese and Margot Robbie.
Everybody just be silent for about 5 to 7 minutes while I look at photos of Margot Robbie.
I think you'd have a better chance of seeing Jagger Gardner move to linebacker than
Jagger Gardner legitimately injured, but I think the fact that you just kind of already written off that he's going to be a medical redshirt tells me he's going to make a transition. Give him an extra year to transition to a new position.
I think you're going to see Sharga get the ball a little bit more, about as much as a fullback should get the ball. You know, I don't see him on defense at all.
Next question comes from Lone Star 2000. Why do we still have 4 quarterbacks above the line?
Well, I mean, if you ask Jeff Collins this, I think he'd break it down this way. I think he'd say Logan Marchie's been our starter. Frank Neutile takes plenty of first-team reps during practice all week, and he's the backup. Todd Senteo's played in games this year, and Anthony Russo was the scout team player of the week last week. So I think that's kind of answer you'd get. He thinks they've all played pretty well in practice. I don't think he wants to leave any one guy out, because why would he have to leave one guy out? If he doesn't have to leave out any quarterbacks. It's, you know, he doesn't have to release a depth chart. There's no rule. So I think he puts all 4 down to try and, you know, keep everybody happy. And I think fans are just going to have to deal with it. But, you know, I don't think you're going to see Anthony Russo in a game situation anytime soon. I don't think that's what it means. But... yeah, I think that's why there's 4 quarterbacks.
It's a beautiful answer. It probably answers the next question, too.
Not safe for work.
Kyle, come back to us, honey.
Next question comes from Temple J on the message boards. Any insight to a Russo sighting this week? Does this have any significance, or is it just calling out a good soldier?
He's talking about, I guess, what, him being the scout team player of the week. No, I don't. I don't know how many other ways we can say it. I just not getting any impression that he's ready to be a significant contributor or quarterback. He is young, but he's had just as many opportunities to earn the job as anybody else. I don't think these guys are so proud and would have so much of an agenda to say, gee, Anthony Russo could really help us win, but we don't want to play him because X, Y, Z. I get that he was an Elite 11 quarterback. I get that he had a nice career at Wood. It just hasn't worked out for him at Temple so far. Maybe it will. Maybe it won't. If he's playing well on the scout team, that's great. But no, I don't think that means he's going to see any significant snaps this week.
Keep in mind, the scout team offense is not running your offense.
Right, they're running ECU's offense.
Houston's offense.
Yeah, and he's probably pretty similar to Kyle Postma, at least skill-wise, Houston's quarterback. I think they have some similarities, so I'm sure he was good.
Like Kyle.
No, he doesn't have the wheels.
Can run like
He can run a little bit, though. So I mean, I'm sure he was good at imitating.
In a game where two Kyles had the chance to play quarterback, you weren't there.
Yeah, guess what? Jumped out of a plane. So
yeah,
fine.
We haven't touched on that. Maybe we should.
I tried jumping out of a plane that day. I jumped out of a plane the next day.
Sunday. Should we talk about that after the mailbag?
Sure.
Yeah. I want to hear about Kyle's skydiving experience.
Next question comes from TU Owls Fan 2004. I wanted to ask how the freshmen look right now. Who looks like the best freshman and who is most improved over the summer, referring to basketball?
From what I've heard in terms of who looks most improved, I've heard good stuff in general about Ernest Aflakpe, which is good. I've heard that he's had a good summer, good off season, which is again a great sign for you, because if his knee is finally really at 100%, he's never going to be Hakeem Olajuwon, but if he rebounds and defends and takes charges and stuff like that, then that's good. You have somebody that you can at least consider to be somewhat of a post presence. Heard good things about Alani Moore too, and in terms of his overall improvement. Now, maybe it's a situation where like the competition is bringing out the best in him. I still don't think that he is quick enough at an elite level to be really, really, really good in this league. Because of his height, but if he's improving because he sees, wow, Nate Pierre-Louis can take minutes from me, J.P. Mormon's going to play this year, Dre Perry's going to play this year, if competition improved him, that's great. But I've heard good things about both those guys. And in terms of the freshmen, again, I think that Dre Perry and J.P. Mormon are going to be your guys that are really going to compete with minutes or 4 minutes. But again, if you look at a kid like Nate, he's really athletic, he's really strong, he can get to the basket. So if you don't see him play as much this year, I think it's just because, you know, if Quentin Rose continues to improve, and Rose is another guy I just keep hearing about constantly. I mean, just a terrific athlete. I mean, he's a guy who's, unless he's in foul trouble, is probably going to be playing 35, 38, 40 minutes for you this year, unless you're comfortable rotating 8, 9 guys in. But so again, hear good stuff about Rose, about Alani, and about Ernest. And again, I think, as we've been saying all along, Dre and JP, probably the two freshmen that have looked the best so far. We're actually going to be, again, we're recording this on a Wednesday. At least Matt, possibly myself, will be at basketball media availability tomorrow, so we'll have some sound for you from that next week, and we'll start talking some hoops a little bit more. But
whoever framed Temple's team photo this year did a disservice by having Steve Leonard stand in the back. I wanted to see how tall Quinn Rose actually is compared to these people. Justin Hamilton looks big height wise. You have Steve Leonard back there. Mm-hmm. Quinn Rose should be back there. I think he's like a legitimate 6'9".
You think Q's 6'9"?
I think he's 6'8", 6'9".
Huh.
With the hair, he's probably 6'9".
With the hair, he's 7'5".
We'll ask him.
Stretch.
We'll have Matt ask him tomorrow.
Next question comes from B.A. Carlson 21 on the message boards. Since fire so-and-so coach and reviving old threads seems to be a hot topic.
Why is everybody doing that? That's not a rhetorical question. Why are we going back 9 months and reviving message board threads?
I don't know.
A lot of people seem to like Dave Patton when they hired him.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I think it's one of the situations where like some of the people are like, oh, I'm not sure how I feel about this hire. Want to like look back 9 months later and look how smart I was. Stop doing it. I'm gonna start banning people.
That stoked the fire for you. A rare response. Like, is that what we're doing now? Reviving 9-month-old threads? I can feel that anger.
It just irritates me because I see it's like blah blah has responded to this thread. I'm like, I never posted this thread. Why did I get this notification on my phone? I go, oh, December 2016. Yeah, 2016. Yeah.
If people continue to do this, then Kyle will have to take action and just start banning.
I'm just gonna start coming down. I don't care if you're paying for the service.
The mean moderator.
Banned. Ban you.
What did I do?
What would happen if I banned you? Can you unban yourself?
Yeah, I think so.
Let's find out.
Really?
Yeah, let's find out.
Well, we need to get to answer questions in this segment. It's too late. He's more engrossed than that. Find out.
Continuing the question here, I'm setting the over-under on the number of basketball games played at 3 before a Fire Dunphy thread is started and an old Obi is overrated thread is revived. Are you taking the over or the
under?
Under.
Those combined or separate? Because either way, my answer is over.
Are we talking minutes into the first game, or are we talking...
No, number of games played before a Fire
Dunphy. Yeah, I was being sarcastic. Well, no. I take the setting the over-under on the number of basketball games played at 3 before 5, I take the under on this. Keeping in mind that people, I love them for it, just in terms of feeling like the message boards are like a virtual sports bar for them. Like, if you go back, and I really don't mean this in a condescending way, but one of my favorite things to do is, like, after a game, you file your story, you do what you need to do, you go home, you check the message boards, and you see what the progression is like 5 minutes in, they're down like 6-2. This offense is still stagnant. And look, hey, they weren't a great team last year. It's not like they've been wildly successful in March. I'm not saying that they've had great stuff to talk about all the time, but then you see the progression, that you can tell when they're on a run. Okay, all right. So I could literally see 5 minutes into a game, Fire Dunphy, Obi sucks, blah, blah, blah. I go under
this.
This
kid was supposed to leave for the NBA, like all this stuff.
Yeah.
I just see with the three games aspect, the first three games of the year, Old Dominion, they should win. Auburn versus Indiana State, who knows if they'll play, and then TBA. I can see like them getting to the championship game of the Charleston Classic, losing, and somebody being like, and we have how many more years of this guy? Somebody needs to put Kraft to the...
Yeah,
unless they win like all three games in Charleston, I don't
see
a scenario.
Then we'll get the overcompensation.
Obi Natchionios plays his way into a top 15 pick. This team has minimum Sweet 16 potential.
Yeah.
Next question comes from Pat Egan, couple here. Why isn't Russo getting a shot at quarterback is the first one.
With quarterback exclamation
Patty,
point.
Patty, what a unique question you came up with there.
How tired are you of being asked why isn't
really
Russo getting a shot at quarterback?
I really appreciate on these rosters of 105 people, you know, people pulling out obscure names like Anthony Russo. I sometimes forget he's on the team.
Yeah. Well, I think those two questions are laced with sarcasm.
So is my response.
Yeah.
Hand in hand.
Then the last.
Oh, I would say my answer is
number two,
very, very tired. I get it. I understand, as Fran Dunphy would say, as we said before, appreciate the question. I get it. He was supposed to, for recruiting enthusiasts out there, he was the kid who was supposed to pan out. I get it. I'm not saying that you're not entitled to ask that question. What's going on here? But, yeah, I'm getting sick of it. You know, if he does something to start earning more snaps, then so be it. Then he will.
I think it lends itself to the position, and you're starting to see a little bit with like Tyler Grainer is getting the same thing. Oh, why aren't we seeing Tyler Grainer? Because he was a kid that had his stars inflated because he went to Imhotep, and probably isn't a running back at this level, and he got injured. And Anthony Russo, yeah, I just not that anybody cares about our opinion, right? Like, I just feel like it's, for lack of a better phrase, almost a disservice to the other quarterbacks that have played ahead of him for you to constantly be like, well, why isn't the number four quarterback playing? Because he's the number four quarterback. He's the fourth best quarterback in that room.
And Pat's last question, what movie do you quote all the time that no one seems to get?
I like this question.
That's a good question, Pat. Do you have an answer?
Yeah, you go ahead first.
The Ladies' Man. I quote The Ladies' Man a lot. 2000 classic.
Tim Meadows.
Probably one of the bad Saturday Night Live movies, but a lot of butt quotes in it.
Yeah.
I used the phrase, you a bad mailman, the other day to somebody. And I'm like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
Because he drops the, he goes, oops, I must be a clumsy mailman. He's dropped the mail because he hates the ladies' man. Tim Meadows goes, now you a bad mailman.
He said it twice. That was great. That was so good. Matt, I don't hear you quoting movies a lot. Is there one that you quote a lot that people are like?
I really like Wedding Crashers a lot.
That's not obscure. Everyone quotes Wedding Crashers, right?
But so you're saying you quote Wedding Crashers a lot, and then people don't pick up on it?
No,
because the question is obscure ones, right? That nobody gets.
What movie do you quote all the time that no one ever seems to get? I think it could just be any movie that if you're quoting, but people aren't getting.
I'll say the line from Wedding Crashers where he goes, Vince Vaughn says it, like he's like, that was my first Asian.
Not everybody
understands that. Like, people get Wedding Crasher quotes, but not always that.
He follows the woman back to, like, they play Mahjong with the grandma.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So
first agent!
Pushing the envelope a little bit this week on the scoop. Dalton, what about you?
Mine's not a movie. Like, I know Seinfeld's a big thing, but, like, I go really deep in obscure Seinfeld quotes that I just, like, I'll say out loud, and people just look at me like I'm
obscure.
Yeah, in our people like our age, they don't know Seinfeld.
Yeah, and it's a shame.
I won't say our generation.
Are you laughing because you're looking? I'm reading an IMDb from Ladysmith.
Some of them are obviously not appropriate.
Yeah.
But he applies for a job at one point, and they're like, "Oh, Mr. Phelps, we see that you put da boot as one of your hobbies." Like, no, that's da butt. It's just really intense. At one point, there's somebody calls him for marital advice, and he says, "May I recommend anal sex?" But he says, "May I recommend the butt." That's it makes me laugh. But it's like it's also hard to find online. You're a bad man, man.
See, this makes me laugh because it makes me think of like there are at least 575 times in my friendship with Kyle where I feel like, have I ever told you how much I like this line? Yes, you have, because I repeat myself all the time, and it's getting bad. It's getting far worse than I thought it would get. So I will repeat quotes. There are a couple that I think of. One is, I like quoting So I Married an Axe Murderer, which was a sort of mid-90s movie with Mike Myers in it when he was starting to get big on Saturday Night Live. Very, very funny movie, but unless you're like my age, unless you're like 41, mid-30s, late-30s, like somehow my wife has seen it. We're 9 years apart, and she gets some of the quotes. I like quoting that movie, but not as many people have seen it. And then I like quoting Four Christmases a lot, and I bonded with your brother-in-law over this. We just started firing off Four Christmases lines back and forth somewhere in Atlantic City on like the pub crawl that we did for Kyle's bachelor party. I was like, this is great, because, yeah, it's not an obscure movie, but I'll bring up quotes from that, and I'll be like there's the part where the baby throws up, Vince Vaughn's around. I was like, I want to do it too. I want to do it too. I'm gonna, like, Vince Vaughn just makes me laugh. Just like same thing in Wedding Crashers. But I like quoting that movie, and I'm like, you've heard that line, right? Nah. A lot of times I come up empty on that one.
I'll say what that was. Vince Vaughn, is it The Breakup is the one with Jennifer Aniston?
Oh, we quote The Breakup a lot, right?
Yeah, we do.
Yeah.
I made Meg watch that. It was on FX like a couple months ago. She watched it. She's like, why am I watching this movie?
That never works out well, though, when you're like, this is such a great movie. Great commercial, but, and you hype something up, which I'm sure I have done from my teenage years up to now with, like, bands. You gotta listen to this band. They're great. What do you think? They're all right. You know, so I'm the same with movies. Like, gotta watch this. Very rarely does your enthusiasm translate to your whoever you're hanging out with as much.
The Ladies' Man is available on the Pirate Bay. There are two people seating right now a video of the Ladies' Man. I will be downloading that when I get
home. Available on what?
Like the torrent site I use. So it'll fall off the back of a truck into my lap. So I can watch one scene. Because I couldn't look. I looked on YouTube for the
Ladies' Man. Probably get the Ladies' Man for like $4 at the Glenside Acme right now.
For the Glenside what?
Acme.
There's no Acme in Glenside.
It's in ShopRite?
Roslyn. It's in Roslyn. The only grocery store that's actually in Glenside is a local grocery store called O'Neill's.
Oh.
Otherwise, you gotta go for.
Yeah, you go into some sort of supermarket, and they have like DVDs for like $5 for.
Or I can get it for free off the internet superhighway.
That's illegal.
That's true.
Yeah. We don't want to talk about pirating. Call your congressman.
Call your best thing we need is
like, come see me.
College coaches are going to get picked up by the FBI, and so is Kyle.
Yes.
You got named in the sting.
We
have lots for what next week?
they play the scoop as evidence during the court trial.
Hang out with Rick Pitino on weekends?
I'm not about that life.
No?
I don't know if you think you can keep up. You think you can keep up with Rick Pitino? You think he's still out there just slanging it?
No.
I think he is.
Hey,
I don't think Rick Pitino all of a sudden found Jesus and stopped taking advantage of slimy women.
Yeah, he's Italian. He's probably Catholic. He probably said a couple Hail Marys and
back at it. Back in the saddle.
Yeah, anyway, all right. So we'll have what more football to talk about next week.
We're gonna have a big. I'm calling that. We're having a big scoop next week. Pay attention. Tuesday afternoon, October 10th. We're gonna have a big scoop on Wednesday.
Schmadium. Football Schmadium. Yeah. Probably some stadium news. We'll see. So, yeah, we'll have a lot to talk about next week.
Yeah, so thanks for listening, and we will talk to you next week.